As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I welcome back Julian Lawrence, the Times football editor, Tony Evans, and broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Rippendon, it's Ollie Kay. Today we'll be focusing on Manchester United's crucial win over Chelsea and Blackpool's battling draw at White Hart Lane. Also, with the Champions League final approaching, I'll be asking my panel what they think is a fair price for a ticket to a top-flight match, as well as a fair allocation for the biggest game of them all. One place to start, Old Trafford. Tony, why don't I start with you? It's 19, isn't it?
I'm sorry. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Okay, let's try this again. Ollie, did Manchester United win the title on Sunday?
Yeah, I believe they won their 12th Premier League title. Is that right?
Yes, that's one way to avoid mentioning the word 19.
Okay. No. It was obviously their 12th title in 18 seasons, or 19 seasons, which is an incredible achievement, and their 19th in all, which overtakes Liverpool's record, which I think any Man United fan and any Liverpool fan would have thought was an absolute impossibility. 20 years ago,
I don't think any of us could conceive that things had changed around like this, and that, you know, and the scale of Ferguson's achievement is that, you know, it was absolutely inconceivable.
Julian, growing up as a little boy in some pastoral village in France, I imagined you walking to school while some guy with a beret and on a bicycle carrying a baguette cycles past, smoking a Gauloise, of course. But I would imagine, like me, when you're a kid, Liverpool was the club in England. And now our kids will probably view it a bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit younger than you, no offense, but
Thank you.
No, but no, I grew up with my dad talking to me about Liverpool, indeed, and you know, those great teams, and then Cantona arrived, and for us French, obviously, when Cantona signed for United, it was a complete change in France. People are starting following United more than anything else, really, even more than other clubs in other countries. It was all about United. Then, you know, then Wenger was there with Arsenal, but Cantona was always very special, and that's when, for the first time, I heard about Sir Alex Ferguson.
Wait, but didn't it have the same effect when Julio signed Salif Jao and Bernard Diomed?
Yeah, and I really thought that at the time, you know, that with Diomed and Jao and then Bishkan, you know, that Liverpool will...
And the news of Dan.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
And Sheru. Don't forget about Sheru. Sheru was a legend for the Reds. Yeah, so, yeah, no, that's really where I learned to know about Ferguson and United.
Tony, enough picking on Liverpool. I trust you'll agree with me. And let's move on to the actual game itself. Going into the game, I think it's fair to say the momentum had swung Chelsea's way. I mean, they weren't super impressive, but they'd sort of been sneaking up on Manchester United. And yet, within a minute, Chicharito scores. We've seen stuff like this so many times from Manchester United, where they just kind of like, all right, enough of that, and they just bolt the door shut.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was an element of wishful thinking, you know, not only from Liverpool fans, but across the country, to the title race going into the last week. You know, it's and I think we probably built Chelsea up more than more than we should have. Perhaps when you look back at those performances and you look at the teams they played, they haven't quite done as well as we wanted to believe. Certainly, they had no answers to United yesterday. I thought they set up all wrong. I thought Ancelotti are completely wrong. I think the biggest thing for Chelsea this season has been the drop off in Frank Lampard's form after coming back from injury. You know, it's He scored yesterday, and you know, normally over Lampard's career, there's been days when he's done nothing but score. But you know, these days he's doing nothing and scoring very rarely. And I think it's really hurt them. I think Essien hasn't looked the player that we all thought he was. The confusion up front has led to, you know, sort of a certain confusion over the style of play they want to set up. I mean, they went out and they got murdered.
You said Ancelotti set up wrong. How would you have set Chelsea up differently? Would you have dropped Lampard and played Torres instead of Drogba?
I think in this circumstance I would have played Torres, certainly, especially when Evra was out, because Evra's the Man United's outlet ball. So, you know, I would have pushed someone up on Evra. I would have got Torres on to close down Vidic every time he got the ball. And, you know, the thing about Drogba is such a great player, but he hasn't got Torres' mobility and he hasn't got his ability to chase down people. And, you know, would have done that, but you know what? United still would have scored in the first minute and Chelsea still would have got stuffed.
Would you have played the same guys in midfield? Or would you have dropped Lampard?
Well, I think that's been the big issue all year. You know, probably they have to look and decide whether they're going to go forwards without Lampard, because I'm not so sure that even a summer without football is going to be able to restore him to anywhere near his best.
Ollie, Tony's kind of ducking the question slightly, methinks, because he criticises Ancelotti for setting up wrong, and I take your point about Torres, but on the Lampard issue, you didn't come down clearly on whether he should have dropped them or not. But I mean, in terms of
Lampard,
you would not have dropped them.
No, I would have made the same mistake there.
So, and was it that unreasonable to think that a midfield trio of Mikel, Essien, and Lampard should be able to handle, you know, Carrick and Giggs?
Well, yeah, I mean, you looked at the midfield, and it was the same before the two Champions League games, where again United set up with four in midfield and they were outnumbered in that central midfield area, yet United seemed to find space in that, in, you know, theoretically congested midfield. Rooney would drop deep and find space. Park and Giggs would both drift into space. Valencia would stretch them, but with his runs down the right. And I think it's a huge indictment of John Obi Mikel, who I know you're a big fan of, Gab, but I just don't see it. For a guy who's meant to be the new Claude Makélélé, the guy who gives them the sort of defensive platform for all their midfield to barge forward, I just don't see Mikel depriving opponents of space and even hassling them when they're on the ball. I mean, just a solution here, or you know, a suggestion here. Would David Luiz be better suited to that role than to central defence?
Julien, David Luiz in midfield, dropping Mikel, playing Torres up front, all these things?
I agree with Oli on David Luiz. I think he definitely doesn't look like a proper central defender anyway. I mean, his positioning on Chicharito's goal is just ridiculous. At that level, in that kind of game, I'm really sorry. You can't be 2 yards behind John Terry. It's just ridiculous. And as well, his touch when he tried to tackle the ball goes into Chicharito's, just the way he was running, so he made it even easier. You know, and I think he probably would be better because he's so good with the ball as well, maybe in central midfield indeed, yeah.
I think it's less about like his position in relation to Terry, but he was actually facing the byline when Hernandez was coming on the inside of him. You know, who was he watching? Who was he supposed to be marking? You know, he should be looking inside the field. He's a centre-half and he's looking outside. I don't know whether it was Rooney, who was 30 yards deeper. But you know what? If you saw that on Sunday League, you'd have a fit. You know, what they need to do, they need to take him away for the summer and take him to a defensive re-education camp, beat him every day and teach him how to defend.
Ollie, what I find remarkable, again, is that, you know, if you go back a few months, there were a lot of people saying that, you know, Nani was a credible candidate for player of the year. And I think it would have been difficult to disagree with him. I mean, you could debate it or not. But and yet, in a huge game like this, Nani doesn't start. Berbatov, of course, United's top goal scorer, he doesn't start. It just seems to me that Sir Alex, more than perhaps any other manager, maybe in the world, you know, has this group of players and he just picks the right players for the day and for the game and gets it right more often than not, which kind of tends to fly in the face of a lot of conventional wisdom these days, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you asked most United fans in February, March, what their team would be for a potential title decider against Chelsea in the first week of May. I think they would probably have had Nani in it. They might have had Berbatov in it, but you look at the way United's season has gone. I think Nani had begun to look a bit tired. I think Berbatov had begun to look a bit short of confidence. At the same time that Park seems to have just transformed himself into a player that, I mean, I've never seen him play so well as he has done the last month. And as for Hernandez, his form has been incredible, absolutely incredible the past month or so. So rather than set up the way he might have done otherwise, he's gone with the guys who are in form, guys who probably were more often getting on the bench at the start of the season, and he's absolutely, well, more than vindicated. I mean, it's just yet another demonstration of his fantastic instinct for players in form, players out of form, players who are on the up, players who are on the down, and I think he got it absolutely spot on. I didn't think he got it right at Arsenal the previous week. I'd have said the same if they'd drawn that match, because I think they looked tired. But I think he deserves an enormous amount of credit for the fact that we're saluting them as champions yet again.
Hey, Tony, is this a bigger achievement than winning the treble?
I think so, personally. I mean, I think the team that won the treble had a lot of talent in it, huge talent across the board. You know, I think this has got much less talent. And I think this, for me, taking a team that may not be the best in the league on paper and winning it is a far greater achievement than, you know, than winning it with the best side.
Since we're doing this paper argument just for fun, I saw it as Julian was nodding. I'll get to you in a minute. Tony, who's better than Manchester United on paper, do you think, in terms of individuals?
In terms of talent? Arsenal have got way more talent than Man United.
And anybody
and
else?
Chelsea. The Chelsea since after January when they signed Torres and Luis, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Ollie, are you buying this?
Potentially. I mean, you could say technically Arsenal are a far more talented team, but we all know what Arsenal lack and what United have. I think if there's a slight technical shortfall between Arsenal and between United and Arsenal, which is open to question, I think there's a huge psychological, mental, even physical shortfall the other way.
But so that's what we're praising Ferguson for here.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, the fact is he's able to harness what does appear to be on paper lesser talents, and you know that United team. I was watching it yesterday, and I said to someone, you know, if ever I've seen a team that's greater than the sum of its parts, it's United. You know, they were just, you know, they look fantastic, and I look at those players, and I'm like, how did they get to be so good?
Mm. And it will sound like, you know, it will sound like damning with faint praise. I don't think it is at all. But you look at Giggs, Van der Sar, to a lesser extent, Scholes, because he's tailed off the second half of the season. But I mean, these players should be years and years past their best. These are, you know, you think of Wenger getting rid of players as they approached their mid to late 20s because he thought, you know, it was a good idea to sell them on and do without their experience. You look at the experience that Giggs in particular and the quality that he's brought to this United team over the second half of the season, and I think he's been the best player in the Premier League the last few months. He's just been fantastic, and if we're calling them greater than the sum of their parts, I think we're acknowledging that the sum of their parts is still pretty good, and that they are taking themselves to another level with the sort of collective belief that they have.
The Chelsea manager Carlo Ancelotti came out and quite clearly said they were better than us on the pitch. They were better than us most of the season. Okay, it's great that he's honest, but should he be part of Chelsea's future? And will he be part of Chelsea's future? Ollie.
Well, I think it should. I think he should be part of their future. I mean, he won the double in his first season. He come close to challenging. Well, they have at least challenged for the title this year in a year of turmoil and transition, which I don't think the turmoil and transition was his fault. I think that was the result of poor decisions made about the size of the squad, and maybe he could have done more to influence those decisions. I don't know, but I can't see Abramovich giving anybody the time to implement their own vision on that club and on that team. He's clearly shown himself to be far too impatient for anything like that. And I would just stick with Ancelotti because I think he's almost the very least of their problems.
Anybody disagree with the mighty Oliver Kay at Oliver Kay Times on Twitter?
No, I'm with him on that. I mean, you know, the mess behind the scenes at Chelsea is far greater than probably any manager could clean up, even Ferguson, and Ancelotti's left, you know, to try and deal with it. And if he does look a little bit lost on the sidelines, well, you're not surprised.
And the players like him, you know. I think the fans like him. I don't think there's a better manager on the market, you know, that is actually without a club at the moment better than him. And you know, he knows the Premier League now. He knows the club. He knows the players. I think he should stay.
One manager who most likely will not be at his club, if not next season, then probably the year after, is Harry Redknapp. And listen, Tottenham. They were chasing Manchester City. They chased City last year. They caught them in fourth place. This year, Spurs against Blackpool, they dropped 2 points. Tony, was that it?
Well, first of all, I'd like to argue with the received wisdom that somehow Harry Redknapp's going to spirit off to be England manager. I think the last few weeks will have had anyone at Wembley who thought Harry Redknapp was a future manager of the national team going, hang on. Because, you know, he's shown all his weaknesses in terms of tactics. You know, it's I think there's even Tottenham fans now who are thinking of Redknapp as being a liability. Yet he did great for the first half of the season, but they've fallen apart. Tottenham are another team that are stocked up with talent. I'll tell you what, Ferguson would have won the league with Tottenham. You know, never mind getting in the top four. Never mind they might finish sixth. You know, the reality is Harry Redknapp, who looked like he was doing a great job early on in the season, hasn't.
Julian, I'm going to turn to Ollie on this because there's just so much scope to mock why English managers are so thoroughly mediocre that Redknapp should still be the front runner and every logical man's choice. Once the FA so intelligently, thank you, Dave Richards, said we need to go with an Englishman because there's so much English talent to manage England. But Ollie, is Tony being unnecessarily harsh on Harry here?
I think it's fair to criticise how their season has tailed off, but I mean, look at how Arsenal's season has tailed off since February. I think Champions League football brings a complicated additional dimension to a team's season. I think teams struggle to juggle those two things. I think United have done it brilliantly. I don't think Chelsea or Arsenal or anybody else has done it brilliantly this season. And I think there's been I think they got a little bit sidetracked by it when they were going through against Milan and playing against Real Madrid, and then having gone out, they've had a complete nosedive in terms of their results. But I mean, that happens. You look at Arsenal's nosedive. I don't think anyone's going to claim that Wenger's a useless manager or that he's not as good as we all thought he would be.
We've been saying for weeks that Wenger's lost sight of what he should be trying to do and maybe needs to refocus. I mean, you know, it's and this collapse by Arsenal isn't something that, you know, they do regularly. I mean, this is just what's happened to Tottenham. It's just a meltdown.
I'm going to talk about a guy, Charlie Adam, who earlier this year was the some people's chic choice to be player of the year, even. But I want to talk about the bad Charlie Adam, that tackle on Gareth Bale. Now, I want to suggest something. All right, if that hadn't been Gareth Bale, if that had been, you know, Dorian Dervit or some old school Spurs scrub, we might not be making such a big deal out of it. But it was Gareth Bale. It was a bad tackle. Adam said it wasn't intentional. Honey, are you buying it? Can you not intentionally step on somebody's ankle with your studs up?
I mean,
when the ball's not there, when you're a professional footballer, you get paid to do this?
It didn't look great, did it? Let's be honest about it. You know, it's it wasn't a very good challenge. I mean, I think, yeah, there's probably an element of he knew what he was doing.
Ollie, Charlie Adam's supposed to be a skill player. He presumably gets, you know, a bunch of Neanderthals kicking him, which probably annoys him. You don't expect him to go do it the other way, do you?
Well, I think if that's his best attempt to win the ball in that situation, then I think he's one of those players who shouldn't be encouraged to tackle, because I thought he was miles off getting the ball. I mean, yes, Bale was quick and he knocked it out of the way, but I thought it was a pretty dangerous tackle, and it's the type that can cause injury, and in that situation it did. So I mean, I was surprised by it, because I don't think he's in quotes that sort of player, but. It was just a poor tackle, and I was glad to hear that he'd apologised and taken the full responsibility for it. And the relief for Spurs if Bale's got an injury that keeps him out for 3 or 4 months or however long, then is that we're at the end of the season and it doesn't matter.
Julian, if you were a Spurs fan, and I know it's a big stretch there, how worried would you be about the fact that Bale seems to, you know, in his short career, he's had a lot of injuries, and you know, he's got the body type where when he does get, you know, when there are collisions, many of them will probably be at high speed and probably come crashing down.
Yeah, I think that would be like that for the rest of his career, because that's the way
the Welsh Aryan Robin.
No, yeah, but although Robin is more a muscular type injury prone player, so I don't think he's the way he lives his life is good enough, Robin. I think for Bale, it's just more that he's going to get kicked all over, you know, all over through his career, and because he goes so fast and he's so quick, I think, you know, that's what's going to happen. I think if Ryan Giggs was 23 now and playing like he was at the time in you know, early 90s, it would be exactly like Bale. He would get kicked all over the place, and
as you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The challenge of Charlie Adam was a disgrace, and I really hope he gets banned, because he deserves it.
Well, that would be £20 million, Charlie Adam, as I recall. But I don't mean to mock him. I'm really disappointed by what's sort of gone on with him the last couple of months. But I'm very happy for Blackpool and Ian Holloway, because as I see it, this result pretty much keeps them up, doesn't it?
You think so?
Well, I'm assuming they're going to get a point, if not more, at Old Trafford on the last day of the season, right?
I don't think so.
No, mate.
No, you know, it's, I think it'll be party time at Old Trafford, and I think United will want to win it.
I remember West Ham going to Old Trafford on the last day of the season needing a win and getting it.
I also remember United going to Hull City 2 seasons ago and fielding a reserve team before the Champions League final and winning. Result on for Blackpool on Saturday did look a very good result at the time, but I think Wolves' victory yesterday changes the picture. I think if you look at the table and you look at the remaining fixtures, I think Wolves will be confident of staying up, and I don't think it's looking great for Blackpool at all. I mean, they could stay up, but it's certainly not looking easy.
Sorry, but hey, maybe I'm thinking a little bit too much like the time that I am, but and we will be getting to Wolves later, by the way. But Blackpool have Bolton next at home, and Bolton at this stage of the season are done.
Yeah, but there's a certain amount of local rivalry there as well.
Bolton are so preoccupied with Blackpool. You really think?
I don't think you can just say that, you know, Bolton have turned in for the summer. I mean,
Bolton lost to Sunderland. Sunderland, who've lost like 22 out of 20 games. They've lost games they haven't even played yet. You really think?
I admit, I will
bet you a steak
I'm
dinner.
I'm wrong. It's a fair cop and society is to blame.
I will bet you a steak dinner that Blackpool get all 3 points against Bolton. And if they really need a point against United on the last day of the season, assuming United have won the title, of course, they will get that as well.
I'll go for that bet.
Can I bet with you as well?
What?
Can I bet with you? I want free dinner. Both, yes. I want a free dinner too.
I will take you both to dinner.
Win or lose, I'm a winner there.
Champions League final, like most finals, it's kind of difficult to keep everybody happy in terms of ticket allocations and in terms of ticket prices. Now, Paddy Barclay's not with us this week. If he were, I'm sure he would argue that the ticket prices are far too high because, you know, I think Paddy would like ticket prices to have stayed the same ever since he attended his very first Dundee game back in a while ago. But the cheapest general sale tickets are £176, which includes an absurd, I think it's a £26 booking fee, which you could kind of figure in the days of the internet and computers, like, what do they do? Like, who actually pockets the money? Tony?
Booking fees have got bigger, haven't they? You know, so as less people are needed, booking fees have got bigger. Works for everyone.
Exactly. It is a brilliant scam, but just for those who don't know, basically it's 25,000 tickets going to Barcelona, 25,000 tickets going to Manchester United, 11,000 tickets going on, quote, general sale. And you had to have entered a lottery for this about 2 months ago. And the remaining sort of 19,000 odd going to sponsors and
football family.
The football family. There you go. Tony, let's start with the allocation before we get into the tickets. I think your Liverpool connections are quite well known, and when Liverpool played in Athens, like, you know, before that, even in Istanbul, first European Cup final in years, it felt like there were 200,000 Scousers coming down. You're not going to please everybody, but with 25,000, a lot of United fans, United season ticket holders, are going to miss out. Do you feel sorry for them?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's, you know, you pay your season ticket money up front, you know, you go every week, and then, you know, when the big game comes along, you don't get a ticket. You know, I think it makes you wonder what season tickets are for. Yeah, I do feel sorry for them. I mean, I do, you know, I'm I don't care about the football family. I don't care about the corporate sponsors. You can sell that any way you like. You know, I'll go the whole way. I'm a communist. I don't want these people at the game. I think the game should be fans for fans. Simple.
Ollie, do you want to make an argument on behalf of the corporate sponsors and against the working class Manchester United season ticket holders?
No, I'm absolutely not in favour of whatever it is, 19,000 tickets going to the UEFA family. I was with Tony the night before the game in Athens in 2007, and I think we ended up at some kind of terrible corporate function, which was, I mean, it would make us sound terribly hypocritical, but it was awful. And there were hundreds and hundreds of representatives, employees of Company X who happen to sponsor the thing, and they're getting free tickets. Yes, we as media get free tickets as well, but it's slightly different, I think. And
well, I didn't have a ticket at that point.
Well, there you go. But these companies pay huge amounts to get their name on the you know, as partners of the Champions League or of the World Cup or whatever, and they get, you know, they wouldn't pay these huge fees in sponsorship if it didn't work for them, if that wasn't good value for them. Quite why they insist on taking hundreds or however many, you know, is it 1,000? I don't know. Quite why they insist on taking so many extra tickets is a mystery. Quite why UEFA allow that, it's a mystery. I mean, at the World Cup final, you could see a huge section of the ground was just devoted to corporate guests of various companies, and it's just ridiculous. 19,000 out of a crowd of 80,000-odd. It is just ridiculous. That is not the football family. That is the corporate family of football, and they shouldn't be there, not in those numbers.
Okay, so Julian, I guess it'll be left to me to, unless you want to go all Sarkozy on me or Thatcher, do you? Or do I have to play devil's advocate here?
I'm more angry against Michel Platini, because I think that's all great work from Michel Platini, and I think it's a disgrace, especially coming from a man that's been so great to football. Just to do the way he's dealing with all those things and... I have to agree with you, my friend. I have to agree with Tony and Oli.
I'll put the opposing viewpoint then, because I am unafraid, and I'll say loud and proud. These sponsors spend a lot of money on football. They spend a lot of money. They put a lot of money in UEFA's coffers for the Champions League. UEFA redistributes the bulk of that income to the clubs. So, maybe if you're a Manchester United fan and or a Liverpool fan, and you're upset that there's so many tickets going to sponsors, maybe you should go to the club and say, excuse me, Mr. Glazer, excuse me, Mr. Werner, Mr. Henry, let's take less money from the sponsors so that we can give them fewer tickets, so that there can be more tickets available to us fans in the Champions League final. Because that's the reality. These people are paying for a lot of the prize money, which the clubs are so happy to enjoy, and which then ends up going to the players generally in wages. So we can't really have it both ways, can we?
Well, I think we can. I don't think that the money that they put into football and into sponsorship is about getting tickets in return. I just don't think that is part of the equation.
Yeah,
I think
that's part of the equation.
After all,
for corporate entertainment.
That's
why they take boxes. Why would they do it?
No, why they're doing it? People, the big credit card companies, the big soft drink companies, is to get the advertising during the game at halftime in Champions League nights.
But they negotiate for a certain amount of tickets at every game.
No, football, Platini. And UEFA should just say, no, right, what you're doing, you're paying for advertising. You're not paying to get a gang of corporate creeps into the match at the expense of real fans. Just say no, like the kids from Grange Hill.
You go to Bayern Munich. They have tremendous corporate sponsorship. That is what allows them to have their cheapest season tickets be something like £150 a year. So, they say 20,000 fans get in for £150 a year because we bend over backwards for these other, 2,000 or however many they are, corporate sponsors. So I think if you can cross-subsidize that way, then...
But that's not what's happening.
For the final, they have very expensive tickets, and then a lot of corporate people as well.
Okay. Just very expensive tickets, then. Let's move on to that. I'm obviously not going to convince you to my devil's advocate corporate greed argument. £80 for... Actually, no. Let's take a step back. Let's talk about this allocation business, just from one other point. 25,000 tickets... per club. I'm pretty sure that's more than clubs normally get. And it's obviously not going to be enough to satisfy Manchester United. It's probably not going to be enough to satisfy Barcelona, I would guess. But on the other hand, if you're a Manchester United season ticket holder who's been to at least a couple of Champions League games this season, you will get a ticket for the final. And Manchester United are kind of an extreme case because obviously they have so many season ticket holders and they're just 3 hours up the road. Ollie, wouldn't you suggest that most seasons, 25,000 per club is generally plenty to satisfy the needs of those fans who really are season ticket holders and really do travel to watch a club?
No, I don't think 25,000 is anything like enough for a Champions League final, especially when it's in the country in question. I mean, if United were playing at Champions League final, United didn't sell... I think I'm right in saying United and Chelsea didn't sell all their tickets for the Moscow final 3 years ago. They sold 99% of them, but they didn't sell them all because that was extremely difficult to get to.
Chelsea didn't.
But if United were playing at a Champions League final almost anywhere else in Europe, 25,000 tickets would not be enough.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I agree with you there, but United are an extreme case. Most Champions League clubs are not Manchester United. Most Champions League clubs do not have 50,000 odd season ticket holders.
No, but if you look at Liverpool, for example, or Arsenal, they don't have 25,000
season ticket holders either. Neither do Arsenal.
Those clubs have huge amounts of season ticket holders and huge amounts
You just mentioned three English clubs. It's not just about the Premier League, right? There is a world out there.
I'm using the most obvious examples, which I'm most familiar with, the sort of season ticket numbers and the fact that they both have huge season ticket waiting lists, as do Chelsea. So any of those clubs, I think 25,000 for a game held in a stadium that holds whatever it is, 88,000, I don't think it's anything like enough. I don't think it's anything like democratic enough.
Let's move on to the ticket prices. So £176, including that important £26 booking fee. That's if you're one of the people who entered the lottery back in April, so you get one of the 11,000 11,000 tickets that were put on general sale. Now, in my view, I've made this quite clear, and again, you will probably all disagree with me. The key figure is actually £80, because that is the cost of the tickets if you buy them from the clubs, and that those are presumably the real fans. People who buy tickets to Champions League final when it's 2 months in the future and you don't know what kind of teams will be there generally tend to, in my opinion, fall into a pretty narrow category, which is generally made up of ticket touts, people with more money than sense, and true purists who love the game, and it's their dream to go to one Champions League final at Wembley. And I do feel somewhat sorry for those people. I really don't feel sorry for the other two categories. Anybody have a problem with the £176 for the general sale ticket?
Well, first of all, I don't think there should be general sale. I think they should go to the clubs. I think they should go to the people who support the clubs. And yes, I think
the
prices.
How will the towns get their hands on tickets then?
Well, yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? But you know, and I think the price is just way too high. I think it's ridiculous. You know what? When you look at the revenues that football gets from its corporate friends, from television, there is no justification. It's mere chicken feed. They're just gouging the fans.
But we're talking about 11,000 tickets priced at between £176 to £300. Anybody else want to back Tony on these? There should be no tickets on general sale? I don't think it's a crazy suggestion from Tony at all, actually.
I think there should be some tickets on general sale, I've got to say. I mean, if this was a Barcelona-Real Madrid final or something like that, or there wasn't an English club there, I think it would feel very harsh on the fans of fans in the country where the match is being held and the city where it's being held. I think it would be very harsh if there were no tickets available to local people. I think part of the attraction is Alex Ferguson always talks about going to the Real Madrid Eintracht Frankfurt game at Hampden Park way back when. So I mean, I think it's a good thing to have some tickets available on general sale, and you can then argue whether it's fair to be charging £176 or whatever. It seems extortionate.
How could a boy from Govan afford £176 back in 1960? Amazing. He must have been wealthy even back then. I'm with Tony, though. I could see both arguments of the general sale. But £80 for a ticket, bearing in mind that these are season ticket holders, in other words, who can generally make the commitment to pay for a whole season up front. These are people who, you know, clearly support their club. I don't know what the average ticket price is at Old Trafford off the top of my head. I'm assuming that certainly at the Emirates and at Stamford Bridge, which are probably closer to the higher end of the table, the average ticket price is probably well north of £40.
Yeah.
Is £80 for a fan, is that gouging?
I don't think so. I think it's fair for a Champions League final to see, you know, to see your team beating Barcelona, or at least trying to, you know, see Messi and Iniesta and Xavi against Rooney. I think it's fair, to be honest. I think that, you know, when that's the price you pay to go to the opera or big, you know, big shows like that, and no one is like talking about those shows. So I think £176 is definitely too high, but £80 is, to me, is fair.
I can live with £80. You know, I'd pay £80. Easy. Pay more, but you know, I mean, once you get over the £100 mark, you know, it's all right. Probably 80, 120 sounds reasonable to me. You know, sort of lowest price seats and the best price seats. Once you're over that, it starts to look like profiteering.
Barcelona United fans, it's kind of like if you wanted to experience that once in a lifetime Champions League final and win it, they've both kind of been there and done that. Should we be having a little less sympathy for them and a little more sympathy for all the fans of the many, many, many other clubs who can only dream about of a Champions League final? I'll ask the PSG fan here.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they deserve to be in the final. They're the two best clubs.
Yeah, not only the clubs deserve it, maybe the fans.
But the fans, is just good for them. They support the best team on the continent. I wish PSG could, take example on United and build a club that could one day reach the Champions League final.
Tony, I'm sure that when you were a little boy, you chose to be a red instead of a blue. That was probably what came into it, that you wanted to go to as many European Cup finals as possible, right?
There was a choice.
On that note, let's wrap this up. Time for some quick hits. No rotation for Tony Pulis, even with FA Cup coming up. Stoke pummel Arsenal 3-1. Lots of acrimony at the Britannia. Stoke fans booing Arsenal players, including Arsene Ramsey. And the Stoke fans say, well, no, that's fine. We booed everybody. Some people in the media getting on their high horse. Ooh, they were being mean because they're booing Ramsey. Tony, is it okay to boo Aaron Ramsey?
No, I think everyone should be nice and everyone should cuddle each other, and I think we should all be friends. It's a bit mean, but he's a professional footballer. You get around the pitch, you get booed. I think what they were booing was for his reaction and not accepting Shaw Cross's apology. I have no problem with them booing them. And love Stoke, love Tony Pulis. I think they've done great. And I think people who wrote them off as being playing bad football saw a different side of them. Yes, they liked them.
Wolves win a huge Black Country derby, beating West Brom 3-1, and doing so without Kevin Doyle. Ollie, were you impressed? Is this what will keep them up?
I was impressed, and this always looked like the game that they had to win to give themselves a fighting chance. They've done that. They've got Blackburn at home on the last day. They might still need a win then to stay up. But looking at the performance of Fletcher in Doyle's place up front, yeah, they look good, and I think Mick McCarthy deserves a lot of credit because he's starting to get a little bit of grief from their fans recently.
Back to the Arsenal. Julian, these guys a little bit. Did they just give up on the season, or are they really, really this bad?
Both. No motivation, no determination, no team spirit, no inspiration, nothing. I think Wenger was unable once again to motivate his own players. I think they can't care less about what's going to happen now in the season. I think it's been a very poor season by their stand and by the talent they've got in it.
Bad, Arsene. Bad.
AC Milan drew 0-0 with Roma on Saturday to win their 18th Serie A title. Were they worthy winners, you reckon?
All told, probably yes. And, maybe Inter Milan would have been different if they hadn't messed around for 6 months with Rafa Benitez and then made the change. Probably should have stuck with one before going to Leo. But Milan spent money. I was very skeptical they could do it. I thought Massimiliano Allegri was kind of a Forrest Gump-like figure. But then somehow he kept it all together. And they were consistent for most of the season, played some of the best football at times. And good luck to them. 18 Serie A titles, that's a lot. That's all we've got time for today. But remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis, your web chat. Mine is on Mondays. And Ollie, when's yours?
Wednesday, 1 p.m.
Wednesday, 1 p.m. You can also catch Patty Barkley and Graham Spears during the week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Marcotti. Tony, you're on?
Tony Evans Times.
Ollie, you're on?
Oliver K. Times.
Julian, you're on?
I was bored. I gave up on Twitter.
Well, there you go. No Julian Lawrence for you, which better reason to keep listening to the Game podcast, because that might be one of the few places where you can find Mr. Lawrence. Till next week. Bye-bye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.